It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 Closet Busters. It is time once again for the Coming Out Lounge. I'm your host, Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach. And today I want to talk about, like, well, dark closets, especially dark closets for my lesbian listeners. And I want you to imagine that you're lost, you're feeling like you can't fit in. Maybe you're constantly being bullied, and you might even be going through some deep anxiety and depression. Now, for some of you, this is probably real life, what I just described. It may be real life for you in and out of the closet. But now I want you to imagine that you've found an escape hatch, one that leads you into a world where, well, you believe you're headed to a space of like-minded people, and only then do you discover that this world may be a little bit harsh, maybe chaotic, and somewhat malicious. In fact, what you might discover once you come out of the closet door, if you go to those like-minded places, is being surrounded by people who are having a lot of sex, and there's some addiction and some mental illness. And that world makes you believe that the only way you can be loved is to basically take on all these other people's demons to be accepted. Well, I want to welcome you to the world of a new novel that's just come out. It's called As Told by Us. It's the debut novel of a bright young author named Gabriella Megan. And she's writing this really interesting story about romance and murder. And it's set in that world that doesn't get explored too often in today's literature. But for her, it was a real world that she discovered at 18 years old. And in her own words, like Layla in the book, she was bullied through high school and was determined to go and reinvent herself. And then when she left for college, she found herself completely immersed in a lesbian community and also found out a lot of stuff that, well, just completely turned herself on her head. So today I'm inviting Gabriella to join us to take us on this journey into a beautiful place of helping us really understand what that other side of the closet doors could look like, and a journey that hopefully will help some of you, myself included, to really see that those demons that sometimes we need to conquer to be happy, regardless of our sexual orientation, are our own demons. And that's the best place to start, is conquering those demons first. So welcome, new debuting author, Gabriella Megan. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So exciting times here, right? Your first book coming out, it's out, and I saw it's on Amazon, so that's always exciting. So congratulations.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks so much.
So talk a little bit. I mean, I know I gave a lot in the introduction, but this is your first book, but it's also a novel. But like, I think for most of us who write, there's always bits and pieces of our own story intermixed in these type of books. So take us a little bit into, you know, what was the compelling pieces behind this, Gabriella?
Sure. So when I turned 18, I came out of the closet and I started to explore the LGBT community. And I fell quickly into a really, really like small group of people. Mm-hmm. And I got sucked into almost like a toxic circle. And at the time I was, you know, I just came out. I had just moved away from home. I'm trying to kind of reinvent myself, which is what Layla's doing in the book. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but be drawn for some reason to this toxic circle. And then on top of that, I'm dealing with school and depression and anxiety. And I feel like I'm trapped. And I feel like I try talking to my mom, I try talking to my dad, I try talking to friends, and they just don't get it. Mm-hmm. I even went as far as, you know, seeking counseling for some of the things I was going through. And I still felt like no one could quite grasp what I was going through. So I turned to writing as my outlet, and I started writing As Told by Us.
Hmm. So like most of us, this is kind of becomes our cathartic way of starting to manage things. I know as I was writing my book, that was very much I think that was probably the biggest thing it did for me. It was like, okay, I finally, wow, I said these words. I got it outside of me. I got it in a space where I could share and hopefully help other people. I love the fact that you're putting enough of yourself into this story, yet it's fiction, and also that it's lesbian fiction, which I think is really beautiful, because I know this is something that tends to be a struggle, is where do you really show up in life? You know, how do you want to show up in life? And I know a lot of lesbian authors struggle, at least the ones that I've talked to, they're like, they struggle between, okay, well, should I be doing fiction or should I be doing something that's nonfiction? How do I show myself, mm-hmm. you know, in a really great way while also bringing something to the community? So I'm curious, how much do you feel like this story, as told by us, is not only just fiction, but it's actually, in a way, giving some tools for people to start to really understand themselves and start to heal themselves so they can be thriving individuals in the community?
So the main character, Layla, in the book, she goes through all sorts of things through... Her main problem in the book is she encounters an abusive relationship, mm-hmm. and you see her struggle and you see her try all these things to kind of break free from this relationship, and eventually she is able to. So I feel like being able to follow her journey is like, she's human, you know what I mean? Yeah. We all have our demons, and I feel like by following her, it's like, okay, sure, we all go through these dark periods in our life, but there is hope, and there is a way to overcome these obstacles that we face on a daily basis, whether it's being in an abusive relationship or being involved in drugs and alcohol, or, I mean, I don't know, being bullied in high school, sure. all sorts of different things. There's always hope.
Right.
And I feel like following Layla through her journey, and that's not the only obstacle she encounters in the book. That's just one of the major ones.
Sure.
But you see this constant up and down, but she's constantly getting these hurdles.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important as we share these sort of stories, whether you're a nonfiction or fiction writer, that we enable people to see themselves as their real self. And that's what I like about what you've done, is you're giving life and breath to a character, just like anybody who does something in the movies or on a stage, where we give life to these characters, but it's that beautiful mirror that we reflect back to one another. This may quote unquote be fictional, so to speak, but there's a piece mm-hmm. of reality that shows up. And I've found oftentimes, the more we can share the story, I mean, as a storyteller and as somebody who's a speaker, which I really don't consider myself mm-hmm. a speaker, I consider myself a storyteller, that I bring life lessons into the story. Mm-hmm. If one person, just one person, can be affected by, wow, the story of Layla and what she's going through to find themselves on a better path, then mm-hmm. your voice has been heard and you've made a difference in the world. And I'm just curious
Absolutely.
If you've gotten any of that kind of feedback yet from people that have read the book, that, you know, wow, this was very interesting, or I can relate to this. Have you had anybody come back to you and share anything like that yet?
I have. So the book's only been out since the 31st of October.
Mm-hmm.
And I have so far had one person in particular tell me that she was going through a similar breakup, mm-hmm. one similar to the one that Layla goes through with Jade. And she said that it gave her the strength to actually leave this person for good. And she like wrote me this whole long Facebook message and like thanked me for kind of, you know, shining light on ways that she could make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've also had just other feedback. I purposely, okay, I don't know if you've seen the page in the book, but I purposely didn't put page numbers in the book because I wanted people to get so lost in the book that mm-hmm. they didn't really like want to put it down.
I did notice that.
So, and I've had, yeah.
That was really interesting.
I've had people tell me that they finished it in one sitting because with the page numbers not there, they're not like, oh, I'll just read to page, mm-hmm. you know, 52 or whatever. So they've all finished it pretty much. Any of the people that I've heard from have finished it in one sitting.
That's interesting. But I also think
it's really awesome.
Well, it is awesome because it shows how we as humans, if we, you know, I'm all about, in fact, I was doing an exercise last night with some people in Los Angeles where mm-hmm. we were talking a lot about letting go. And mm-hmm. especially, you know, given, you know, our current state in our country where we now have a president that, you know, for some of us is not the best thing. And for others, they're like, well, we'll see where it goes. But I've been having to say a lot to myself lately. Okay, I'm going to just trust and let go. And what you just talked about is like letting ourselves go to be in a story and not worry about, okay, let's get to this page. And it just opens us up to the possibilities of not being so stressed out and not being so worried about things. And I noticed as soon as I started reading, I'm like, well, this is interesting. And I'm thinking, well, do I have a galley copy here? Because it doesn't have pages on it. And then the further I got into it, I'm like, I wonder if this is intentional. So you kind of stole my question, which was coming up, but I'm glad we got to this because I think that's really amazing. So as people read this, and I guess because I've seen other works, more nonfiction works around this, my first thought was, I wonder how many people are going to question, well, does this really happen? Does this really happen in our gay community where there's abuse and all this stuff? And I'm glad you're shining a light on this because I know from a gay male perspective, I've seen this. I've seen it more than I want to admit. I mean, I've worked with clients more than I want to admit around this. But this is something I think is one of our community's dirty little secrets. It doesn't get talked about enough. And not just the abuse. I'm going to go to a place where part of what, you know, has brought you to this is coming to understand your own diagnosis of depression and anxiety. And I wish there was, I know we're talking about this more as a whole in society, but I also feel like this is another one of our communities kind of known that we have a lot of depression and anxiety in our community, which isn't surprising, but it's almost like a shameful thing that we don't want to talk about that either because, you know, the gays, they're all supposed to be happy and joyful and all this stuff. Right. So I'm so glad to see you doing this because I think this is conversations we need to be having more conversations about. These aren't our secrets. They don't need to be hidden away. So was that part of the reason that you brought this to life in the way that you did because you felt that these sort of things needed to be spotlighted more?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a dialogue that we have avoided for so many years, and I feel like it's a dialogue that definitely needs to be brought to light. Ultimately, I would like to, first I want to start off with college campuses, and I would like to go around and talk to the LGBT groups on college campuses about these issues, because growing up, I mean, I say growing up, but like from probably 18 to 21 for me was a really, really hard time, and I don't know. I was so new to it. And I'm like, okay, is this how it's supposed to be? And I did go through, you know, an abusive relationship like Layla had gone through. And I looked to people, I even like dealt with the cops twice. And the cops told me that because we were both females, there was nothing they could do about it. And no reports were filed. So it's like, we need to speak up about this because we have the same rights to be protected as, you know, the heterosexual community. And I feel like we shouldn't be ashamed to talk about it. We shouldn't be scared to talk about it. We shouldn't pretend it's not happening because it is. And there are resources out there to help people that go through it. And I feel like we so often hear about resources or we see commercials or we see ads and it's always a man and a woman, but that's not always the case.
But I think this is where the dirty little secret shows up. You know, first of all, the community doesn't really want to spotlight it. But then society doesn't really want to spotlight it either because we've got that kind of double-edged sword from a societal perspective of, well, they're the gays and the lesbians. So, you know, they don't really matter. Now, for all the strides we've made, thanks to some really beautiful things, you know, President Obama has been able to bring about. Now we may be facing something different. And so, yeah, what happens now? Let's just say, you know, so to speak, time gets turned back. And we become even more so the second class citizens again. So then does that mean, you know, we don't get the same protections? You know, you just brought it up. It's scary to think that in an abusive relationship, oh, well, they're the gays. So, you know, let them beat each other up and whatever. You know, it's just it's insanity to me. Those moments had to be very frustrating and scary for you when you would call upon what you thought would be a support system. And basically it got yanked out from underneath you.
Right. And when I did go through it, you know, I don't know. I just felt like, I'm like, is this really like, is this real life right now? Like, how can someone that is supposed to be a safe place for everybody, like the police, like how can they sit here and look me in the eye and say, well, if, you know, because what they told me was if you file a report, then it's going to go on your record too. And I'm like, are you kidding? Like, do you know what she did to me? You know? Mm-hmm. So it was like, I felt like it was so surreal. And I'm like, this isn't the way it should be. Like, everybody should have, you know, an outlet. Everyone should have a safe place, someone that they can call if they really need help. Mm-hmm.
So as you were going through this, were there some resources you finally did find that you felt that could support you?
Honestly, I felt like the best resources I had were probably my friends at the time. Mm-hmm. Even when it came down to my family, like, I was too scared to kind of tell my mom about it because I didn't want her to, like, worry about me. Sure. And then my dad knew about it, but he was kind of like, you know, just toughen up and get out of it and whatever. And it's like, it's not that easy. So I had one friend in particular who really, really helped kind of coach me through getting out of that mm-hmm. process. And since then, I've been like in therapy and whatnot. Sure. And that's definitely helped a lot.
Yeah. So if you were to, you know, give someone some advice right now who may be going through some, you know, abuse such as this. And I want to make sure everybody's clear. And I know we got smart listeners, but sometimes people are tuning in for the first time and they may not really have ever even been brought into this scenario. Abuse can take on many forms. It can be emotional mm-hmm. abuse. It can be verbal abuse. It can be physical abuse. There's the term gaslighting that a lot of people talk about. There's narcissistic stuff that mm-hmm. shows up. But as a first step, you know, having gone through this yourself, what would you encourage someone to do who may be in the same shoes where they feel like they want to go to the police, but they're not sure they're going to get the support? So where would be the support system you would encourage someone to turn to first?
I think that if it's escalated to something physical, yeah. as much as you don't want to go to the police about it and as scared as you are, and as much as it might not be immediate, you definitely need to go to them. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, I would do it all again, even if he looked me in the face and told me like that they weren't right. going to do anything, just because there is a chance that they are going to do something for you. And I just happen to not have that luck.
Sure. I think in this day and age too, where we all have this lovely little weapon, and I'm not talking guns in our pockets. We have these lovely little weapons that are called, you know, phones, that are smartphones
yep,
with the cameras and everything. And, you know, yep. as people have been, you know, reacting to the presidential election, and as we've been going through this, you know, people trying to figure things out, one of the things that I've been thinking about that I've seen other people posting about too is now more than ever, your phone is your best friend. Because mm-hmm. this is, you know, yes, you can be in the midst of something, and even if you're trying to videotape it, if somebody were to grab it out of your hands, you know, at least capture what you can. And I actually had this really strange thought yesterday as I was driving into LA, thinking, you know what, I wonder how much consumption of body cameras might begin to right. escalate, you know, because everybody might mm-hmm. get into a space of, okay, I'm going to have a body camera on, which I don't even, you know, I'm having this thought in my car going, I don't even know if they sell these things other than, you know, police officers, but I wouldn't be surprised that there will become a market for this, because if we start to live in a space mm-hmm. of fear, and again, I'm bringing this back to this arena, the domestic violence arena, mm-hmm. your camera on your phone is really one of the best defenses you have. Because even in the moment, and I have to confess, I have lived through this in a different realm, but I've been through the domestic violence arena myself. I can't imagine what it would feel like to actually have the power of the camera in my hand. Because mm-hmm. I believe that would actually, it may not stop the abuser, but it would actually cause them to pause to go, you need to know, I am taping this. And this
right.
one, you know, it's very interesting to think about the impact that those sort of things can now have. So mm-hmm. the other thing I was going to suggest too, go ahead. I know you were on to something else.
Yeah, no. And I was going to say, even something as simple as recording them or calling somebody real quick and having your phone nearby and just not talking to the person, but that way someone else can listen to what's going on so they can be a witness. Like, mm-hmm. something as simple as that can be used in court.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's definitely important to document it. Number yeah. one thing, document.
Well, document in any way that you can, you know, and mm-hmm. I've learned this throughout the years in many ways and on many personal fronts that it may seem almost ludicrous to document the mm-hmm. things you do, mm-hmm. but when you need that documentation, it will not seem so ludicrous. Everything from
right.
a conversation to, I mean, I can relate to this right now in some arenas that I'm going through where without the documentation that I have available to me, this could be a very different scenario that I'm going through on some stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, oftentimes it hurts because you are keeping records of something that paints the person that you thought you cared about in a very different light.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it also is the thing that in many ways could save your life. And when I use those words, I don't use them lightly. It could save your life from a physical perspective. It could save your life from a mental, emotional abuse perspective. And as you've just alluded to, and I have gone through my own times of, you know, being in therapy, it can take a lot to undo some of this. It can take a lot of time because it does begin to influence how we see ourselves and how we show up in the world and the things that we choose to brush under the carpet, so to speak. I think that's one of the hardest things in this arena is people who have found themselves in this arena. And I've had several friends. And again, I went lived through this myself as a child. Mm-hmm. Once you brush it under the carpet, then you learn to brush other things under the carpet very easily. And that's one of the hardest things to unravel. But this is life.
Right.
We hide this. We do this, you know. And of course, then that contributes to our own depression and anxiety and things such as that. So it sounds like you have used this book in a very beautiful way to not only share your story and to provide, quote unquote, entertainment. But what is the thing that you learned most about yourself as you started to allow this beautiful creative process to flow out of you?
I think I realized, honestly, like how strong of a person I had become. Mm-hmm. It actually took me 6 years to finish my book. And my book's not very long. It's just shy of 200 pages. Mm-hmm. And in the writing process, I wrote majority of it while I was experiencing the things I was experiencing. Mm-hmm. And about, I would say this time last year, I was like, I need to revisit this. I need to wrap this up. And it like was such a struggle for me to go back to it because I didn't want to relive those things. And so I more or less, you know, forced myself to go back and reread things and edit things and relive, you know, the story. And I think it honestly proved to me like, okay, like you can do anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important for anyone. Like if you really, really set your heart to it, you can do anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of your quotes that I found somewhere that I was reading and the stuff that I was reading preparing for this is your quote about every person fights a daily war with themselves, but it's how we choose to fight the war that really matters. That's such a beautiful... It's such a beautiful mantra, and especially when you're in pain, and whatever that pain is, listeners, I'm talking the pain of, could be the pain of coming out. It could be the pain of rejection of family members not accepting you as your LGBT self. It could be the pain of being in a domestic violence or verbal violence, sort of, whatever it is, just realize that we all have these fights every day, just as Gabriella said, and how we choose to stand up or face these is the war that truly, truly does matter. So... But this didn't just, this wasn't really your first thing. I know that, you know, you said it's been 6 years, but you actually have a poetry blog as well, right?
Yeah, I started a poetry blog probably back in 2009 or 2010. Mm-hmm. And poetry was my outlet, you know, for everything since probably middle school and high school. And I kept notebooks on notebooks, and I still keep notebooks, but I try to put a lot of it on my poetry blog. And you'll see the ups and downs in my poetry, you know, the happy days, the bad days. Mm-hmm. And that also, if you actually were to compare the time of my poetry to the story that I wrote, you would be able to see eerie similarities in the story and the poetry, for sure.
This is one of those outlets, you know, oftentimes I get clients coming to me and going, okay, well, how do I get through this? Whatever it is, you know, most of mine starts with coming out, but then I work with a lot of clients who are moving on from, you know, a relationship or wanting to get out of the career they're in or trying to find themselves. And the question always comes, how do you move through this and how do you get past this? And I always encourage them in some way to find a creative outlet. And it can be writing,
absolutely,
it can be drawing, it can be whatever it might be, because when we don't allow our creative self to exist, it's very hard to then, in my opinion, to create creative thoughts to help us survive. And clients have often looked at me when I said that, it's like, okay, so you need creative outlets to exist so that you can have creative thoughts to survive. And I can always see the light bulb kind of go off, you know, on their head, mm-hmm. so to speak, because it's like, wow, I never thought of it that way. I think it is very, very beautiful when we can see that, because again, something you also said is, you know, every mountain of life throws us challenges, but those mountains are something we can all conquer if we choose to say,
yeah,
hey, we're going to do that. So, mm-hmm. you know, as you look ahead, and I know with the blog and now the book, what's kind of next? I mean, I know you do some modeling and stuff like that too. What's the next thing for Gabriella?
So I really, really would like to get into touring campuses and speaking out against domestic violence for, you know, the LGBT community. I want to get more involved also in programs that help LGBT youth with suicide prevention and crisis mm-hmm. prevention and intervention. And I am still writing. Yeah. I actually started a sequel for As Told by Us, but this one is not based off of my life at all. Mm-hmm. And I kind of continued the story the way I thought it'd be interesting. Mm-hmm. And I also have two other books started, and I want to publish a poetry book. So.
Awesome. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
And to Gabriella's point that, you know, she wants to give back and she wants to have an influence on, you know, LGBT youth and young people. She's also donating $2 from every sale of her book right now to the Trevor Project, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's awesome. And it's such a beautiful organization. And we will definitely have a link to the book on the show page. It'll be there for you. We'll also have a link to the Trevor Project so that if you've never heard of it, you'll be able to go check that out. And I would, you know, greatly encourage anyone who just, first of all, if you want a great read, I mean, I've only got a little ways into it, but I told Gabriella, I'm enjoying the style and everything. And yes, I'm a gay man and I will read the lesbian novels. So, you know, hate me if you want, you know, I think it's just really fascinating. And again, I think it's going to have a huge impact for anyone that, you know, really wants to dive in here. And sometimes these are the interesting stories that, as you've already seen, you know, you said you've already had somebody come back to you via Facebook and say mm-hmm. how much it's impacted them. But as I have done my work, when my book came out, one of the most compelling testimonials I got back was from a heterosexual woman who said, mm-hmm. I so enjoyed reading your book and coming to understand your journey, but I also realized how much your journey out of the closet is my journey out of the closet as a woman. And that was a moment.
Wow,
that's awesome. Like, wow, this, I never would have expected that. I thought, I mean, I had some inklings around that because now that I'm working on a platform that I really talk a lot about, we all have closets. We're all coming out of something. I see the mm-hmm. correlation there. So one of the questions I always ask as we, you know, it's hard to believe it, you know, 30 minutes flies by the way it does. But one of the questions I always ask as we come to the end of the interviews is, you know, as someone who has come out, been on her journey, continues to come out. That's always something I say is we never stop coming out. So don't think, okay, we do this momentous event and we're done. As we can see, and I know I'm coming back to the political front, but we all may be coming out in a lot bigger, different ways in the next few years. If you were to leave some advice for people who are either coming out or maybe in this domestic violence arena, what would be something you'd like to leave the listeners with to just give them some inspiration and motivation?
Love yourself. I feel like too many people try to put other people ahead of themselves, and you can't take care of anyone else mm-hmm. until you take care of yourself. And I feel like we lose that notion. So don't forget to love yourself. Love yourself wholly and give yourself time each day, even if it's 5 minutes a day, to mm-hmm. just like honor yourself. Mm.
That's such a beautiful sentiment, and it's something that I use a lot with my clients. You know, oftentimes they're like, okay, well, what do I need to do? And I'll say, well, what do you think you need to do? And we'll create a bunch of lists of stuff, you know, depending on what it is. And I'll say, okay, so how would you like to start? And they're like, well, this is really daunting. I said, okay, so let's start with pick one thing, mm-hmm. you know, pick one thing, spend 5 minutes on it, you know, and they'll go, but that doesn't get me very far. I'm like, well, you don't realize that if you try to surmount this pile of stuff that you are going to go through, especially, you know, when I'm working with a coming out client, if you try to surmount all of this mm-hmm. at one time, it's daunting and you will not be happy. You mm-hmm. will not feel successful. But if you take one thing and you spend 5 minutes, and then the next day, maybe you spend 5 minutes again. And then as you work through it, you start to spend maybe 10 or 15 minutes on it. it suddenly becomes very doable and very easy. I shouldn't say easy to achieve, but it becomes much more able to achieve than, oh my God, here's this mm-hmm. big mountain that I'm, you know, trying to climb right now. So I actually have one more question before we wrap up. What are you most proud of about getting this book out?
I think the fact that, oh goodness, that's such a hard question.
I know. I remember people asking me that about my book. I'm like, oh, well, I thought that would be an easy one, but wow, it's kind of difficult.
Yeah. I think for so long, I was scared to publish the book because of how much it actually does resonate with my life story. Mm-hmm. And I was really, really afraid I was going to get some negative backlash from people that I had known in my past and no longer associate myself with. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm really proud of myself for biting the bullet and saying, like, it's not about them, it's about me. It's about me telling my story. And if they don't like that, then tough, you know, because it happened and it needs to be known and it needs to get out there. Mm-hmm. So I think, my most proud thing is actually, you know, doing it without being so scared anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, something you just said, it takes me back to one of my favorite quotes that I throw at my clients all the time is, you know, when you said, it's not about me, it's their stuff. That's what it is. Anybody who throws, lobs the stones at you and, you know, interesting stuff has happened since the election. I've had quite a few things lobbed at me from different people in really weird spaces. But when I come back to center and I say to myself, this is all about them, it's not about you. It's much easier to get through. In fact, the quote that I use with a lot of my clients and listeners who listen all the time have heard this before, but I think it's very poignant to share it once again, is what someone says is all about them. What you hear is all about you. And one of the things I think we as authors and writers who do put it out there, I felt the same way. I thought I am, and I really laid some stuff out there on the line. I mean, I talked about my infidelities and being a big hoe and, you know, all this stuff about that. And I thought, you know what? I'm really putting it out there. But what the reason I wanted to do that wasn't for my own ego. I wanted other people who are probably in the same space to go, okay, I'm not alone. This isn't just my experience. And when we can normalize these experiences, whether it be coming out or domestic violence or, you know, being a big hoe or whatever it is, when we normalize these, that these are just human experiences that we have and that we make. And yes, we all make mistakes. Again, if we touch a heart or two or 10 or thousands or millions, because we said I was big enough to share my experience, then that's when we have the beautiful impact we do on the world. And I just want to say I feel really blessed, Gabriella, to have been able to share you today with the world own way and bring you to some people that may not know who you are yet. It's been really a great pleasure to have you on the Coming Out Lounge today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And with that, we're going to wrap it up for this week, everyone. And I hope you have a really, really great week. Keep stepping out, stepping up, and stepping in to living your most powerful truth. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach, and we will catch you in just a couple of days. Take care, everyone. Hey, 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 closet dwellers and Coming Out Lounge listeners. I wanted to ask you a question. If you could take stress out of your journey, be more content in who you are, and find ways to do some of the most difficult things that you need to do as you come through the closet doors, would you do it? I bet the answer is yes. Why do I know this? Because I have been getting requests from listeners and clients or prospective clients about finding ways to just address certain things in their coming out journey. Some people don't want to work for a long time, and I totally get that. And that's why I've designed some brand new Coming Out Coaching one-on-one sessions. These are very focused, topic-specific sessions. For example, maybe you're looking at coming out midlife and how do you do it? Could be that you're already out, but you're not completely out and you want to talk about how do I do this and come out at work? Could be that you're having trouble even accepting yourself as a gay person. And might there be a possibility that you're really struggling with your sexuality and your religion? Depending on what you're looking for, I've designed 9 powerful, highly focused one-on-one laser coaching sessions that you can choose from. Each session goes for 90 minutes. We stay specifically focused on the topic at hand. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So now that you've heard about this, how would you like to go check them out? Well, here's how you do this.
go to thecomingoutcoach.com. On that page, you can scroll down. You'll see stuff for the book and for some other offerings, but then you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button, and it will take you to a page that describes each of the 9 offerings that I have. If you happen to be listening to the podcast right now, just look over to the right-hand side of the show page, and you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions right there. Again, just click on that button and go check out these new offerings. So, what do you think? Isn't it about time that you stepped out, you stepped up, and you stepped into resolving whatever the biggest issue is in your coming out journey? I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, and I can't wait to work with you one-on-one.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more. And tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.